Gulliver's Travels, Part 1, Chapter 2. The Emperor of Lilliput, attended by several of the nobility, comes to see the author in his confinement. The Emperor's person and habit described, learned men appointed to teach the author their language. He gains favor by his mild disposition, his pockets are searched, and his sword and pistols taken from him. When I found myself on my feet, I looked about me, and must confess I never beheld a more entertaining prospect. The country around appeared like a continued garden, and the enclosed fields, which were generally 40 feet square, resembled so many beds of flowers. These fields were intermingled with woods of half a stang, and the tallest trees, as I could judge, appeared to be 7 feet high. I viewed the town on my left hand, which looked like a painted scene of a city in a theatre. I had been for some hours extremely pressed by the necessities of nature, which was no wonder, it being almost 2 days since I had last disburdened myself. I was under great difficulties between urgency and shame. The best expedient I could think of was to creep into my house, which I accordingly did, and shutting the gate after me, I went as far as the length of my chain would suffer, and discharged my body of that uneasy load. But this was the only time I was ever guilty of so uncleanly an action, for which I cannot but hope the candid reader will give some allowance, after he has maturely and impartially considered my case, and the distress I was in. From this time my constant practice was, as soon as I rose, to perform the business in open air, at the full extent of my chain, and due care was taken every morning before company came that the offensive matter should be carried off in wheelbarrows, by two servants appointed for that purpose. I would not have dwelt so long upon a circumstance that, perhaps at first sight, may appear not very momentous, if I had not thought it necessary to justify my character, in point of cleanliness, to the world, which, I am told, some of my maligners have been pleased, upon this and other occasions, to call in question. When this adventure was at end, I came out the back of my house, having occasion for fresh air. The Emperor was already descended from the tower, and advancing on horseback towards me, which had likely to have cost him dear, for the beast, though very well trained, yet wholly unused to such a sight, which appeared to be as if a mountain moved before him, reared up on its hinder feet. But that prince, who was an excellent horseman, kept his seats till his attendants ran in and held the bridle, while his majesty had time to dismount. When he alighted, he surveyed me round with great admiration, but kept beyond the length of my chain. He ordered his cooks and butlers, who were already prepared, to give me victuals and drinks, which they pushed forward in a sort of vehicles upon wheels till I could reach them. I took these vehicles and soon emptied them all. 20 of them were filled with meat, 10 with liquor. Each of the former afforded me 2 or 3 good mouthfuls, and I emptied the liquor of 10 vessels, which was contained in earthen vials, into one vehicle, drinking it off at a draught, and so I did with the rest. The Empress and young princes of both blood and both sexes, attended by many ladies, sat at some distance in their chairs, but upon the accident that happened to the Emperor's horse, they alighted and came near his person, which I am now going to describe. He is taller by almost the breadth of my nail than any of his court, which alone is enough to strike an awe into the beholders. His features are strong and masculine, with an Australian lip and arched nose, his complexion olive, his countenance erect, his body and limbs well proportioned, all his motions graceful, and his deportment majestic. He was then past his prime, being 28 years and 3/4 old, of which he had reigned about 7 in great felicity, and general victorious. For the better convenience of beholding him, I lay on my side, so that my face was parallel to his, and he stood but 3 yards off. However, I have had him since many times in my hand, and therefore cannot be deceived in the description. His dress was very plain and simple, and the fashion of it between the Asiatic and the European, but he had on his head a light helmet of gold, adorned with the jewels, and a plume on the crest. He held his sword drawn in his hand to defend himself, if I should happen to break loose, and it was almost 3 inches long. The hilt and scabbard were gold enriched with diamonds. His voice was shrill, but very clear and articulate, and I could distinctly hear it when it stood up. The ladies and courtiers were almost magnificently clad, so that the spot they stood upon seemed to resemble a petticoat spread upon the ground, embroidered with figures of gold and silver. His Imperial Majesty spoke often to me, and I returned answers, but neither of us could understand a syllable. There were several of his priests and lawyers present, as I conjectured by their habits, who were commanded to address themselves to me, and I spoke to them in as many languages as I had the least smattering of, which were High and Low Dutch, Latin, French, Spanish, Italian, and lingua franca, but all to no purpose. After about 2 hours the court retired, and I was left with a strong guard to prevent the impertinence and probably the malice of the rabble, who were very impatient to crowd upon me as near they durst, and some of them had the impudence to shoot their arrows at me. As I sat on the ground by the door of my house, whereof one very narrowly missed my left eye. But the colonel ordered 6 of the ringleaders to be seized, and thought no punishment so proper as to deliver them bound into my hands, which some of his soldiers accordingly did, pushing them forward with the butt ends of their pikes into my reach. I took them all in my right hand, put 5 of them in my coat pocket. As to the 6th, I made a countenance as if I would eat him alive. The poor men squalled terribly, and the colonel and his officers were in much pain, especially when they saw me take up my penknife. But I soon put them out of fear, for, looking mildly and immediately cutting the strings he was bound with, I sent him gently on the ground and away he ran. I treated the rest in the same manner, taking them one and one out of my pocket, and I observed both the soldiers and people were highly delighted at this mark of my clemency, which was represented very much to my advantage at court. Towards night I got with some efficiency into my house, where I lay on the ground, and continued to do so about a fortnight, during which time the emperor gave orders to have a bed prepared for me. 600 beds of common measure were brought in carriages, and worked up in my house, and 150 of their beds, sewn together, made up the breadth and length, and these were 4 double, which, however, kept me but very indifferently from the hardness of the floor, that was of smooth stone. By the same computation, they provided me with sheets, blankets, and coverlets, tolerable enough for one who had been so long injured to hardships. As the news of my arrival spread through the kingdom, it brought prodigious numbers of rich and idle curious people to see me, so that the villages were almost emptied, and great neglect of tillage and household affairs must have ensued, if His Imperial Majesty had not provided, by several proclamations and orders of state, against this inconveniency. He directed that those who had already beheld me should return home, and not presume to come within 50 yards of my house, without license from the court, whereby the secretaries of state got considerable fees. In the meantime, the emperor held frequent councils to debate what course should be taken with me, and I was afterwards assured by a particular friend of a person of a great quality, who was as much in the secret as any, that the court was under many difficulties concerning me. They apprehended my breaking loose, that my diet would be very expensive and might cause a famine. Sometimes they determined to starve me, or at least shoot me in the face and hands with poisoned arrows, which would soon dispatch me. But again they considered that the stench of so large a carcass might produce a plague in the metropolis, and probably spread through the whole kingdom. In the midst of these consultations, several officers of the army went to the door of the great council chamber, and 2 of them, being admitted, gave an account of my behavior to the 6 criminals above mentioned, which made so favorable an impression that in the breadth of His Majesty and the whole board in my behalf, that an imperial commission was issued out, obliging all the villages, 900 yards round the city, to deliver every morning 6 bevies, 40 sheep, and other victuals for my sustenance, together with the proportionable quality of bread and wine and other liquors, for the due payment of which His Majesty gave assignments upon his treasury. For this prince lives chiefly upon his own domains, seldom, except upon great occasions, raising any subsidies upon his subjects, who are bound to attend to him in his wars at their own expense. An establishment was also made of 600 persons to be my domestics, who had board wages allowed for their maintenance, and tents built for them very conveniently on each side of my door. It was likewise ordered that 300 tailors should make me a suit of clothes after the fashion of the country, that 6 of His Majesty's greatest scholars should be employed to instruct me in their language, and lastly, that the Emperor's horses and those of nobility and troops of guards should be frequently exercised in my sight to accustom themselves to me. All these orders were duly put in execution, and in about 3 weeks I made a great progress in learning their language, during which time that the Emperor frequently honored me with his visits, and was pleased to assist my masters in teaching me. We already began to converse together in some sort, and the first words I learnt were to express my desire that he would please give me liberty, which I every day repeated on my knees. His answer, as I could comprehend it, was that this must be a work of time, and not to be thought on without advice of his counsel, and that first I must lumos kelmin peso des marlon imposo, that is, swear peace with him and his kingdom, however, that I should be used with all kindness. And he advised me to acquire by my patience and discreet behavior the good opinion of himself and his subjects. He desired that I would not take ill if I gave orders to certain proper officers to search me, for probably I might carry about me several weapons, which must needs be a dangerous thing, if they answered the bulk of so prodigious a person. I said His Majesty should be satisfied, for I was ready to strip myself and turn up my pockets before him. This I delivered part in words and part in signs. He replied that by the laws of the kingdom I must be searched by 2 of his officers, that he knew this could not be done without my consent and assistance, and he had so good an opinion of my generosity and justice as to trust their persons in my hands, and whatever they took from me should be returned when I left the country, or paid for at the rate which I would set upon them. I took off the two officers in my hands and put them first in my coat pockets, and every other pocket about me except my two fobs and another secret pocket, which I had no mind should be searched, wherein I had some little necessaries that were of no consequence to any but myself. In one of my fobs there was a silver watch, and in the other a small quantity of gold in a purse. These gentlemen, having pen, ink, and paper about them, made an exact inventory of everything they saw, and when they had done, desired I would set them down that I might deliver it to the emperor. This inventory I afterwards translated into English, and is word for word as follows. Imprimis, in the right coat pocket of the great man mountain, for so I interpret the words, Quinbis Felestrin. After the strictest search, we found only one great piece of coarse cloth, large enough to be a foot cloth for your majesty's chief room of state. In the left pocket, we saw a huge silver chest with a cover of the same metal, which we, the searchers, were not able to lift. We desired it should be opened, and one of us stepping into it found himself up to the mid-leg in a sort of dust, some part whereof flying up to our faces, such as both the sneezing for several times together. In his right waistcoat pocket we found a prodigious bundle of white thin substances, folding one over another about the bigness of three men, tied with a strong cable, and marked with black figures, which we humbly conceived to be writings, every letter almost half as large as the palm of our hands. In the left there was a sort of engine, from the back of which were extended 20 long poles, resembling the palados before your majesty's court, wherewith we conjectured that the man mountain combs his head, for we did not always trouble him with questions, because we found it a great difficulty to make him understand us. In the large pocket, on the right side of his middle cover, so I translate the word ranfulo, by which they meant my breeches, we saw a hollow pillar of iron about the length of a man, fastened to a strong piece of timber larger than the pillar, and upon the side of the pillar were huge pieces of iron sticking out, cut into strange figures, which we know not what to make of. In the left pocket, another engine of the same kind, in the smaller pocket on the right side, were several round flat pieces of white and red metal, of different bulk. Some of the white, which seemed to be silver, were so large and heavy that my comrades and I could hardly lift them. In the left pocket were two black pillars, irregularly shaped. We could not, without difficulty, reach the top of them as we stood at the bottom of his pocket. One of them was covered, and seemed all of a piece, but at the upper end of the other there appeared to be a white round substance, about twice the bigness of our heads. Within each of these was enclosed a prodigious plate of steel, which, by our orders, we obliged him to show us, because we apprehended that they might be dangerous engines. He took them out of their cases and told us that in his own country his practice was to shave his beard with one of these, and cut his meat with the other. There were two pockets which we could not enter. These he called his fobs. They were two large slits cut into the top of his middle cover, but squeezed close by the pressure of his belly. Out of the right fob hung a great silver chain with a wonderful kind of engine at the bottom, which he directed him to draw out whatever was at the end of the chain, which appeared to be a globe, half silver and half of some transparent metal. For, on the transparent side, we saw certain strange figures circularly drawn, and though we could touch them till we found our fingers stopped by the lucid substance. He put this engine into our ears, which made an incessant noise, like that of a watermill, and we conjecture it is either some unknown animal or the god that he worships. But we are more inclined to the latter opinion, because he assured us, if we understood him right, for he expressed himself very imperfectly, that he seldom did anything without consulting it. He called it his oracle, and said it pointed out the time for every action of his life. From the left fob he took out a net almost large enough for a fisherman, but contrived to open and shut it like a purse, and served him for the same use. We found therein several massy pieces of yellow metal, which, if they be real gold, must be of immense value. Having thus, in obedience to your majesty's command, diligently searched all his pockets, we observed a girdle about his waist made of the hide of some prodigious animal, from which on the left side hung a sword of the length of five men, and on the right a bag of pouch divided into two cells, each cell capable of holding three of your majesty's subjects. In one of these cells were several globes or balls of the most ponderous metal, about the bigness of our heads, and requiring a strong hand to lift them. The other cell contained a heap of certain black grains, but of no bulk or weight, for we could hold above 50 of them in the palms of our hands. This is an exact inventory of what we found about the body of the Man Mountain, who used us with great civility and due respect to your majesty's commission, signed and sealed on the fourth day of the 8th/9th moon of your majesty's auspicious reign. Clefrin Freelock, Marcy Freelock. When this inventory was read over to the emperor, he directed me, although in very gentle terms, to deliver up the several particulars. He called for my scimitar, which I took out, scabbard and all. In the meantime, he ordered 3,000 of his choicest troops, who then attended him, to surround me at a distance with their bows and arrows ready to discharge. But I did not observe it, for mine eyes were wholly fixed upon his majesty. He then desired me to draw my scimitar, which, although it had got some rust by the sea-water, was in most parts exceedingly bright. I did so, and immediately all the troops gave a shout between terror and surprise, for the sun shone clear and the reflection dazzled their eyes as I waved the scimitar to and fro in my hand. His Majesty, who is a most magnanimous prince, was less daunted than I could expect. He ordered me to return it to the scabbard and cast it on the ground as gently as I could, about 6 feet from the end of my chain. The next thing he demanded was one of the hollow iron pillars, by which he meant my pocket pistols. I drew it out, and at his desire, as well as I could, expressed to him the use of it, and charging it with only powder, which by the closeness of my pouch happened to escape the wetting of the sea, an inconvenience against which all prudent mariners take special care to provide, I first cautioned the emperor not to be afraid, and that I let it off in the air. The astonishment here was much greater than that at the sight of my scimitar. Hundreds fell down as if they had been struck dead, and even the emperor, although he stood his ground, could not recover himself for some time. I delivered up both my pistol in the same manner as I had done my scimitar, and then the pouch of powder and bullets, begging him that the former might be kept from the fire, for it would kindle with the smallest spark, and blow up his imperial palace into the air. I likewise delivered up my watch, which the emperor was very curious to see, and commanded two of his tallest yeomen of the guards to bear it upon a pole on their shoulders, as draymen in England do a barrel of ale. He was amazed at the continual noise it made, and the motion of the minute hand, which he could easily discern, for their sight is much more acute than ours. He asked the opinions of his learned men about it, which were various and remote, as the reader may well imagine without my repeating, although indeed I could not very perfectly understand them. I then gave up my silver and copper money of my purse, with 9 large pieces of gold and some smaller ones, my knife and razor, my comb and silver snuff-box, my handkerchief and journal-book. My scimitar, pistols, and pouch were conveyed in carriages to His Majesty's stores, but the rest of my goods were returned to me. I had, as I before observed, 1 private pocket which escaped their search, wherein there was a pair of spectacles which I sometimes use for the weakness of mine eyes, a pocket perspective, and some other little conveniences, which, being of no consequence to the emperor, I did not think myself bound in honor to discover, and I apprehended that they might be lost or spoiled if I ventured them out of my possession. End of chapter 2. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.